amounts of action. Dive beneath the surface of this ocean, which I would tell everybody to have that experience. You're going to see constant, massive, unlimited amounts of massive actions, of activities, like everywhere. Just beneath the crust of the planet, on this planet on which you walk every day, the movement is unbelievable. Massive levels of action taking place every single second of every single day. Look inside of an ant mound or in a beehive, and you're going to see colonies of living beings generating massive amounts of action in order to ensure their survival into the future. You know, the anthill, the beehive, underneath the crust of this planet and below the sea level, there aren't any psychiatrists telling you to back off, man. There's no medication, baby. It's full out. Go for it. Kill it. Massive action. My dad was a very hard worker and very much a disciplinarian. And he was definitely willing to take massive action. Unfortunately, he died when I was 10 years old, which really hammered into me. I mean, this loss hammered me big time into a retreat. Oh my gosh, that's a big loss at 10. I look back now and realize this event, I begin to retreat from areas of life in which I needed actually to take more action. Meanwhile, at 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15 years old, I was expending a lot of energy in areas that really shouldn't have received any of my attention. Later in life, it was drugs, alcohol, wasting time, games, whole list of useless activities, damaging, dangerous, but I was taking massive action. This continued through high school, then college. Man, I accumulated a few more losses along the way, lost an older brother when I was 20, lost some girlfriends along the way. I continued to progressively retreat from those things that were good for me, and continued concentrating my massive action on destructive areas. I wasn't necessarily lazy or unmotivated, even though people would have said that about me. But I wasn't. I was taking massive action in some areas, but completely retreated in others. Look, I just simply didn't have the proper direction and was being misinformed and encouraged not to attack life. I spent most of my time as a kid in classrooms, bored, without purpose, and then gravitated to areas of life which I could expend a lot of energy, have big experiences, but not produce constructive results. I think this experience is actually something that many people endure or experience sometime in their life. Some people in their mid-40s, later in life, early. It just happened to me early on to misuse my energy and resources. Now, as I mentioned in a previous chapter, I experienced a major wake-up call at the age of 25. I knew I had to get redirected, or else I would pay the ultimate price, the big price. I made a decision to make the same commitment to the creation of success, massive action, as I had been to my destruction. Since it was already hard work, not succeeding, destroying myself, I just changed the focus. See, people used to say, man, you're not focused. I'd say, yeah, dude, but I am focused. See, I was just focused on something destructive. Everybody's focus, you know? I never procrastinated where I could take massive action, where I hadn't agreed on retreatment. I just changed my focus at 25. Despite the fact that my father had been gone for 15 years, he still left with me this strong sense of work, push, make it happen. He was a great role model for me. He believed in strong work ethic. He was willing to do whatever it took to provide for his family. My father worked from a place of duty. He went after success as though it was a calling, a responsibility, an obligation, and his duty to take care of his family. I'm sure he enjoyed the financial rewards and the sense of personal accomplishment that came with his achievements. However, it was clear to me that he thought it to be his responsibility to his family, me, his wife, his church, his name, even God. He just ran out of time, baby. The body couldn't handle it. Now, once I finally woke up from my period of misdirection and misinformation, I committed all my energy to my career. I basically dropped the destructive things and took all that energy and redirected it into one thing. I'm going to be successful. Ever since the age of 25, the one thing I did right, whether it was the first sales job I have or the first company I built, was I approached whatever the task was before me with unbelievable, massive amounts of action. It was never retreat. It was never no action. It was never average levels of action. It was constant, persistent, immense attack on a target. And I was labeled, negatively labeled for this constant, persistent, immense attack. Massive action is actually the level of action that creates new problems. So that's what massive action is going to do. It's going to create new levels of problems. So if you ask me, Grant, what does massive action mean? Baby, massive action is when you create new levels of problems. And until you create problems, new problems, you're not operating at the fourth stage of action. For instance, when I started my seminar business at the age of 29, I employed the 10X rule. And I employed the 10X rule because I wanted to create a name for myself as somebody that was going to change selling for everyone. I was going to bring ethics to selling. I was going to bring a new wave of selling. Not all these things that you've read about in books about avoid, evade, manipulate, know their personality type, neuro-linguistic programming, and figure out trick them. I wanted to create a new way to sell people. And I used the 10X rule to create a name for myself. I'd start my day at 7 a.m. or earlier in most cases, and I wouldn't get back to my hotel till 9, okay? I was with clients at 7 a.m. I'd get back to my room sometimes 9 and 10 o'clock at night. I spent the day cold calling. You understand cold calling? I'm calling on multimillionaires. Didn't know my name. I didn't know their name. I didn't even know the receptionist I had to get through. I'm walking in cold and calling on these guys, and offering to do presentations for their sales and management teams. I'd visit as many as 40 organizations in a day. I was kicked out of 28 of them, okay? 12 of them would take my time. 6 of them would throw me out after they heard what I had to say, and 6 of them would become interested. I remember once being in El Paso, Texas, a city where I've never been. I knew no one. I'd never, ever flown into El Paso. I don't even think I knew where it was at on a map until I went there. Within 2 weeks, I had seen every single business in that market. Although I was unsuccessful in making everyone in that market know me, I certainly secured more business by taking massive action than I would have otherwise. A real estate agent at the time had asked to travel with me because he was interested in the business I was building and what I was doing, and he wanted to observe firsthand how I was growing my business. After 3 days of shadowing me, he admitted, "Grant, there's no way I can do this for another day." I said, what are you talking about? He's like, "I can't even ride with you another day, dude." He's like, "I'm only riding with you and I'm exhausted." And I said, "You know what? I'm onto something, man. If I can operate at this level, I can smoke everybody." I then approached every day like my life depended on the actions I took. I wasn't the smartest. I didn't have any money. Nobody knew me. I'll outwork them. I'm just going to operate at 10X, massive levels of action. I refused to leave that city without knowing I had done everything possible to meet every business owner there and offer my services, introduce myself, and get to know their sales team. Calling on companies cold taught me more about taking massive action and then grooving that discipline in that was natural to me anyway and natural to each of you than any other activity I've ever done and has proved more valuable to me in all my other ventures. See, when you're taking massive action, you're not thinking in terms of hours or calls. When you start operating at the fourth degree, your mindset shifts, and so will the results. You'll end up instigating opportunities that you'll have to address earlier, later, and in a different way than you would on a normal day, so a routine day will become a thing of the past. You understand? See, when you start operating at massive, you instigate situations. You trigger stuff and make things happen that you then have to say, "Oh, I got to be there earlier. I got to stay there later." The normal day just drops out. Routine things are a thing of the past. I continued this commitment to massive action until one day it was no longer an unusual activity at massive, but a habit. It was interesting to see how many people would ask me, "Dude, why are you still out this late at night? What are you doing here on a Saturday? Why are you calling me on a Sunday? What are you doing calling on us, you know, this late in the day? You never quit, do you? I wish my people worked like this. I wish I could hire some people like you. What are you on?" Yeah, I was on something, all right. Dude, I was on my only choice. My only choice was massive action because retreat and average was not acceptable. I was treating success as my duty, obligation, and responsibility, and massive action was my ace. It was my ace in the hole. Signals that you're taking massive action are having people comment upon your level of action and admiring you for that. However, you can't think in terms of compliments or how many hours you work or even how much money you're making when you're operating at this degree. Instead, you have to approach each day as though your life and your future depend on your ability to take what? Massive action. When I started my first business, I had to make it work. I didn't have a choice. Look, there was nothing else I could do for a living. There was simply no two ways about it. This is what I had to do. If I wanted people to know me, about me, about what I had created, about what I thought would actually help not two or three people, but millions of people, then I had to take massive action, period. The problem wasn't competition. My problem when I started my business was one thing, obscurity. People didn't know who I was. My problem wasn't money. My problem was obscurity. My problem wasn't time. My problem is you didn't know me. My problem wasn't the gas bill or the phone bill or the hotel I stayed at. My problem is, hey, they don't know me. And the only thing that keeps people from knowing you and your product and your idea is massive action. This has been the single biggest problem I've encountered in my whole business, obscurity. Imagine from any entrepreneur's viewpoint, if they don't know you, they can't buy from you. If they don't know you, they can't hire you. This is every entrepreneur's biggest problem, obscurity. People don't know you, or they don't know your product, or they don't know your idea, and the only way to burst through obscurity is by massive action. You can't just spin your way into people knowing you. I didn't have money. Most of you, you're not going to have the money to advertise. Truth is, advertising, big advertising, billboards, TV, and big radio campaigns are only available today to the biggest of companies. I didn't have any money to invest in advertising, so I spent all my energy on phone calls, mail, traditional mail, emails, cold calls, return calls, visits, more visits, personal visits, asking people for help, just massive, sick levels of action. See, this level of massive action may sound and is indeed exhausting at times. However, it will create more certainty and security. I like certainty and security, don't you? I'd rather be exhausted and secure than rested and insecure and uncertain. And I promise you, massive action will create more for you than any education or training you will ever receive in your lifetime. Now, I've been called a lot of things due to my commitment to action. I've been called a workaholic, obsessive, greedy, never satisfied, driven, even a maniac. I've been labeled with all kind of labels like you got a problem. Yet every time I've been labeled like this, it's always been by someone, interesting enough, that was operating at less than the fourth degree of action, massive action. Because people that operate at massive action don't label other people like something's wrong with them when they're operating at massive action. I've never had someone who is more successful than I am considering my excessive action to be a bad thing, because successful people know firsthand what it takes to achieve that kind of success. Successful people don't see excessive levels of action as a problem. Only unsuccessful people do. They, the successful, know themselves how they got where they wanted to go, and they would never identify massive action as undesirable in any way. Taking massive action means making somewhat unreasonable choices. And then, very important, you're going to follow it up with more action. This level of action will, I promise you, will be considered to be borderline insane by others. They're going to label you as something wrong with you. Wait for it. You're going to hear it. They're going to say that you've gone well beyond the agreed upon social normal. And remember, massive action is going to create new problems for you. You want new problems, don't you? Not old problems that are little and boring. Aren't you sick of those? But remember this. If you don't create new problems, baby, you ain't taking enough action. You want new problems. I want too many people at the seminar. I want the room to be too small and people have to stand up. I want too much money. I want the taxes to be too big, okay? I like it. You want those kind of problems. You can also expect to be criticized. I promise you, you're going to be labeled by others when you start taking levels of action that are considered massive. The second you start hitting it big, I promise you, you will be judged by the mediocre. But look who you're being judged by. The mediocre, the average, the retreaters, the do-nothings. People who operate at the other three levels of action will be threatened by your activity level and will often make it seem somehow wrong, what you're doing is wrong, in order to make themselves okay. These people cannot stand seeing others succeed at these levels. They can't even stand seeing other people operate at those levels, much less succeed, and they will, consciously or unconsciously, do everything they can to stop you. Whereas a sane person would step up to your level. He'd admire you. Dude, that I like that model, baby. Step up. A mediocre person, an average, a retreater, a do-nothing will tell you, you're wasting your time, man. This isn't going to work in our industry. Hey, it's a turnoff to our clientele. You notice how they try to help you with that little covert, that voice of theirs? Hey, I'm just trying to help you, man. It's a turnoff, I'm telling you. You know, take it or leave it. No one wants to work with you anymore. You're not being a team player. Even management occasionally discourages the massive action employee from putting forth this kind of substantial effort. It's even management's doing this thing because they're threatened. See, you're going to know you're stepping into the realm of massive action when, one, you create new problems for yourself, and two, when you start receiving criticism and warnings and supposed help from others, including family members. But stay strong, baby. Stay strong. You know the other three don't work. This activity of massive action will break you out of this hypnotic state of mediocrity that you've been taught to accept, that you're surrounded by every day. And in order to deliver at that level of massive action, you must take every opportunity that comes your way. For example, okay, my wife's an actress. I tell her all the time, I say, baby, say yes to any audition. She could, hey, I got this audition. I don't know if it's for, baby, say yes. Say yes to everything. Say yes to life. Say yes to the experience. I don't care if it fits you or not. Regardless of whether you're prepared, it doesn't fit you, do it anyway. It's better to suck and be seen than not be seen at all. But what if I bomb, she says. I tell her, Hollywood is filled with terrible actors. They're still working. You know why? Because they're being seen, man. Look, just get out there. Maybe they won't pick you for the part. Maybe you suck. You went up for it. They see that you're perfect for some other part. Maybe you suck and they're like, hey, that chick would be perfect for that person we need because that person needs to suck and she does it naturally. And my wife doesn't suck, but you know what I'm saying? You want to show up. The goal is to be seen, to be thought of, to be considered in one way or the other. Your only problem is obscurity. It's not talent. In order for the endeavor you've chosen to work out for you, you have to make constant, relentless effort, and massive action is the only level you want to operate at. Massive action cannot hurt you. It will always help you. This is also one place where quantity is more important than quality. Money and power follow attention. Money and power follow attention. So whoever gets the most attention is the person who takes the most action. And sooner or later, that person's going to get the most results, as long as they're constructive and not destructive. No one's going to come to your house and make your dreams come true. Okay? It's not going to happen. Your dreams are not going to happen in your living room or your kitchen. You got to go out into the marketplace. No one's going to march into your company and make your products known to the world. In order to stand out from the crowd, the average, the masses, and for customers to even consider your product, your dream, your services, your organization, you must take massive action. I talked about the importance of domination, this domination concept, in my first book, If You're Not First, You're Last. I was not alluding to a concept of physical domination, but rather I was discussing the concept of mental domination, that is, occupying the space of the public. So that when people think or hear about a product similar to yours, a service, an industry, boom, they think of you. Why? Because you permeated space by taking massive action. Making massive action a discipline will break you through obscurity, which is your only real problem. Massive action will increase your value to the marketplace, and it will help ensure and guarantee that you generate success in any area of life where you elect to operate with massive action. Exercise. When was a time in your life when you were taking massive action all the time and winning? Number two, what will you immediately create when you start taking massive action? There's one thing that'll happen immediately. Number three, what can you expect those who don't take massive action to say about you when you do take massive action? And four, what other things may happen as you start to take massive levels of action? Chapter 8, Average is a Failing Formula. Look around and the chances you'll see a world filled with average. Although this is, as I previously stated, the acceptable level of activity upon which the middle class is built, there's growing amounts of evidence that this thinking and activity level is unworkable. Jobs are being shipped overseas. Unemployment is becoming more rampant. Members of the middle class are unable to keep their heads above water. People are living longer than their savings do. And entire companies and industries have been wiped out as a result of average products average management, average workers, average actions, and average thinking. This addiction to average will kill the possibility of making your dreams a reality. Consider the following statistics. The average worker reads an average of less than one book a year and works an average of 37 and a half hours a week. The same person makes 319 times less money than the top CEOs in America, who, by the way, claim to read over 60 books a year. Many of these financially successful executives are maligned, that means hammered or beat up, for the huge sums of money they receive. However, we often fail to appreciate what these people have done to get where they are. Look, although it might not always look like they're working very hard, we dismiss the fact that somehow they managed to attend the right school, make the right connections, and then did whatever was necessary to move up the food chain and become CEO of the big bank. Don't be a hater, man. Join the club. Figure out what it takes to get in the top. It all required substantial action on their part to get hooked in. You can resent them if you want to, but that doesn't change the fact that they're being rewarded for the success they achieved. By the way, everybody completely disregards that they read 60 times more than the average worker. You know, after the economy suffered greatly in 2008, Starbucks founder Howard Schultz, guy that I admire unbelievably, began to do what almost every other CEO in America was doing, cutting expenses and getting rid of non-performing locations. So the first thing he did, he just started whacking, huge whacks at expenses. He got rid of 500 Starbucks locations that weren't performing. But what he did next was different than most CEOs. He then did something that most CEOs did not do, or at least I didn't see him do. He traveled all over the United States and other countries to meet with Starbucks patrons, people buying coffee. Long after the average worker had gone home, self-made billionaire Howard Schultz was visiting Starbucks stores all across America, meeting with coffee drinkers to find out how Starbucks could better satisfy customers. Now, although the media didn't do much reporting on this, it was a pretty astounding pattern of events that happened after this. Here was a guy making his way across the country at 9 o'clock at night to get feedback from people buying his products. See, this is a prime example of embracing a greater than average thought and action process. This is clearly above and beyond what the marketplace and even the customer expects. It far exceeded action considered common for any CEO. And Starbucks, by the way, performed with a very solid and strong growth reflected by their stock charts. This company makes a product, by the way, that people do not absolutely need, especially during troubling times. Yet Starbucks continues to sell and grow both its brand and return to investors. It dominates its sector completely. This demonstrates that although the quality of the product is clearly important, the individuals who work for an organization are truly the focus that will make the most difference. Schultz knew exactly how to approach the situation. Despite the recession, despite temporary contractions, he managed to expand his organization, not necessarily more locations at the time or more product line, even though he's done that since, but by using his personal energy, his resources, and creativity to take massive action and touch each of his stores and many of his patrons and increase his presence with his brand and thereby increasing his revenues. Any undertaking that includes accepting average will fail you sooner or later. Anything conducted in standard average amounts simply won't get the job done. The normal level of action at which most people operate fail to take into account the effects of various forces, gravity, age, resistance, timing, and the unexpected. Baby, something's going to happen that you didn't plan on. When average actions hit any resistance, competition, loss or lack of interest, negative consequences, situations, or challenging market conditions, or all of these at the same time, you're going to find your project get hammered and tumble down. In addition to resistance, competition, you know, just the normal things that can happen in a marketplace, I want to also have you consider that there may be, in your career and in your time, concerted efforts of individuals outside of your group or maybe inside your group who actually will impede your efforts. Now, although I'm not a person to be paranoid or live in fear, I had this personal experience and have learned from it that there are people that exist that will approach you as someone that wants to help you who actually wants to impede your efforts. I was approached by a group who claimed to want to make me a partner and help me. However, they never intended to bring me on as a partner. but instead intended from the outset to steal from me the successes I had created in my own life. Now, I never planned on this in any of my equations when I did a business plan, thought about the future, but these guys literally robbed me of years of efforts and successes. So take it from me. You cannot plan on everything. You won't plan on everything that's going to happen to you. And people will try to take from you what they are unable to create themselves. When I look back and attempt to analyze what happened with these guys, these criminals, I realize I was susceptible to their enticement because I wasn't operating at 10x levels anymore. I was operating at 10x compared to them, but not 10x compared to what I could do. This really opened my eyes to the fact that the moment I stopped, the moment I start resting on my own laurels and thought I could coast a little bit, I made myself a target. This isn't something that happened to me. This is something that happened because of me. It's almost impossible to plan for every situation in your lifetime. I promise you, you will experience extraordinary conditions that you have not planned on, some of which may be hostile and unpleasant. The best way to plan is to condition your thinking and your actions to 10x levels. Succeed so big that no one, no person, no event, no series of missteps can ever take you down. Average levels of anything will always fail you, or at the very least, put you at risk. Now, if on the other hand, you create more success than you want or need, you'll always be prepared. Even when those who can't create success for themselves try to steal your success from you. Although I've experienced years of success at levels that others deem to be quite impressive, I knew in my heart that I had quit taking massive action at that time. My eye was taken off the ball. And sure enough, these guys decided to peel a little of my success away, and they got away with it. And it was quite an expensive and humbling setback. But it really woke me up to the fact that, look, you're never too safe to move to normal. You're never too safe to make a normal level of involvement, activity, and action a choice. Once you do so, I assure you that what you have and what you've dreamed of will start to disappear. It will be eroded either by natural mechanisms or by someone trying to take it. This holds true for your health, your marriage, your wealth, your spiritual condition, everything. Normal gets you just what normal says it's going to get you. Normal. Average. Below levels of extraordinary. See what average thoughts and actions will get you? Average problems that can quickly become overwhelming problems. What if you live 20 years longer than your savings? Do you understand a problem with that? Many of us will have to take care of other family members because they didn't have the 10x mindset or operate at 10x levels. What happens when your mom or your dad, your brother, your uncle, your aunt, your grandfather calls and says, "I need some help, man. I got 10 years left. And I don't have any money." And you can't help them? That's average. What about the possibility of long-term health issues or some state of economic emergency that you haven't foreseen, you know, lasting for some unforeseen time? What happens to entire classes of people who made average financial plans when faced with extended periods of very difficult economic times or decades of extended unemployment that we're going to probably be faced with? Average is a failing plan, is a disaster waiting to happen. It's a train wreck. Average doesn't work in any area of life. Anything that you give only average amount of attention to will start to subside and will eventually cease to exist. Companies, industries, artists, products, individuals who continue into the future successfully are those who approach every activity with the outlook that average is just not good enough. You need to change your commitment and thinking to be far above any concept or consideration that involves average. I promise you that when you do so, you will immediately start influencing other areas of your life and other people. Your friends and family will start to change. Results will improve. You will find yourself getting lucky. You may even experience time flying by, getting more done. And the actions you are taking will begin to improve not just your own life, but your associations with other people. Average is also a reason why most new companies fail. A couple of people get together, they have a great idea, they write a business plan. Maybe this happened to you. Start a company, they base their predictions on everything going in their favor. They may even create what they consider to be a very conservative projection. Let's say we show the product to 10 people. We're bound to sell it to at least 3 of them. Well, let's be conservative. Someone in the group says, "Let's cut that in half. We'll be especially safe. Can we still make it?" They decide that even based on the most conservative plan, they will be successful. But what they didn't correctly assess is how many people they would have to call on just to do the initial 10 presentations. Everything else was right. 1.5 out of 10 were good. What they didn't understand was they'd have to see 100 just to do 10 presentations. Even the most amazing product on earth might require 100 calls just to get 10 meetings. Just because you have the next step of the project completely planned out doesn't mean the rest of the world is with you. They're paying attention to their own stuff. They're committed to their own schedules, their own products, their own projects, their own initiatives. Merely getting the opportunity to see the right people is going to take so much effort, enormous effort and persistence. Just getting in front of the right people. Most people are building business plans based on average considerations and ways of thinking, not massive amounts of action that are necessary to push through resistance. See, when new ideas come together, they're influenced by excitement and enthusiasm. Many negative considerations, such as competition, economy, market conditions, manufacturing, lending, raising money, preoccupation of the clients, that's a huge one. Your clients are preoccupied with other projects. How about earthquakes, wars, tsunamis, you know, entire cities being wiped out, production being stopped, distractions by the media? You see, your optimistic projections prove unrealistic. Even the most conservative objectives are missed because you just couldn't plan on everything. A key partner gets sick. Maybe there's some significant change in economic conditions, global events like we're seeing right now, and it shifts everyone's attention for 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 months. People involved in the new venture start to lose their enthusiasm pretty quick, don't they? They start bickering. Things become more difficult than was originally considered. Failure emerges as the likely possibility. The partners go through more money than anyone projected, and no income coming in. One of the dreamers begins to have second thoughts and wonders if perhaps he should bail. Retreater. He's trying to protect himself. Since the players don't seem mentally, emotionally, or physically prepared to take the massive action necessary to push through market resistance. Now, continuing with the scenario, in order to resolve the lack of income, the members of the group, the remaining members, try to borrow or raise money from their friends. They hit even more resistance. Then they realize it's going to become increasingly difficult for most people or anyone to ante up to the unreasonable amounts of relentless 10x actions that are necessary to see things through. The partners start to believe that their company relies more intensely on raising money than it does on increasing actions. They spend all their time, "We got to raise money." They don't think about, "Dude, just increase the level of activity." Because they didn't correctly estimate the 10 level of thoughts and actions necessary to see it through. Average assumes incorrectly, of course, that everything operates stably. People optimistically overestimated how well things will go, and then underestimate how much energy and effort it will take just to push things through. Anyone who has made it in business will support this concept. You simply cannot train or prepare for normal conditions of gravity. You cannot train or prepare or fund for normal amounts of competition, resistance, or market conditions. Don't think average, baby. Think massive. Compare your actions to having to carry a 1,000-pound backpack that you wear every day into a 40-mile-an-hour wind on a 20-degree upward slope. Prepare for massive, persistent action, and I promise you, you'll win either way, no matter what happens. You'll be the last standing. Most businesses fail because they're unable to sell their ideas, their products, and services at prices high enough to sustain the company and fund its activities. The company isn't able to collect revenue in quantities great enough because the people on which the company was built, their employees, the customers, they take normal average amounts of action, and that's it. Look, average never yields anything more than average, and usually much less. Average thinking and actions will guarantee you a life of misery, uncertainty, and failure. Rid yourself of everything that is average, including the advice you get from the friends you keep. Sounds too tough? Remember, success is your duty, your obligation, and your responsibility. And since there is no shortage of success, any apparent limitations you're experiencing might simply be the result of average thinking and average acting. Rid yourself of every concept of average. Study what average people do and prohibit yourself and your team from considering average as an option. Surround yourself with exceptional thinkers and doers. Let your friends, family, and work associates know that you treat average like a terminal disease. Remember, average anything will never get you to an extraordinary life. Look up the word average and you will see for yourself what it holds for you. Typical, ordinary, common. That should be enough to abandon the concept from all your considerations. Exercise. I want you to write down the names of people you know who operate at only average levels. I want you to write down three times in your life where average actions cause you to come up short. Write down the names of people who you know who are exceptional and describe how they are different and operate above average levels. I want you to look up the word, the definition of average as an adjective and write it here. Chapter 9, 10X Goals. This chapter will blow you away, I promise you. It is the number one reason why your goals are not attained. I believe that one of the major reasons, if not the only reason, why people don't stick to their goals and fail to accomplish their goals is because they fail to set goals that are high enough from the beginning. I have read many books on goal setting and even been to seminars on this topic, and I constantly see people set goals that either they never get started on or later bail out on. Frequently and regularly, most of us have been warned against setting goals that are too high. Even in seminars, I've heard people say, oh, you don't want to set them too high because then... The reality is, if you start with small, you're probably going to go small. People's failure to think big enough in the beginning usually means they will never act big enough, often enough, or persistently enough. After all, who gets excited about so-called realistic goals? And who can stay excited about anything with an, at best, average payoff? That's why people begin to bail on projects, even before they get started. When they experience any kind of resistance, later, they bail. Their goals just aren't big enough to keep you jacked excited. To maintain your enthusiasm, you have to make your goals substantial enough that they keep your attention. Average and realistic goals are always, almost always, a letdown to the person setting them, who is then unable to fuel his or her goals with the actions necessary to accomplish the goals. Indeed, most people, no offense, are so apathetic about their goals that they only write them down once a year when the media says, oh, it's resolution day. We got to write our New Year's resolutions. As far as I'm concerned, nothing worth doing is done once or twice a year. It's ridiculous. The things upon which your life depend on the most are the actions you take every day. That's why I make sure to always do two things. One, I write my goals down every day. And two, I choose objectives that are just out of my reach. I recently saw an interview with Ted Turner. He said the biggest mistake his father made was that he had set goals that were achievable. He achieved them, and then he spent the rest of his life depressed. So this opens me up to my full potential. When I'm writing my goals down every day and I'm choosing objectives just out of reach, it opens me up to my full potential, which I use to fuel my actions each day. Some people suggest that setting improbable, unreachable goals might actually cause a person to become disappointed and lose interest. But look, if your goals are so small that you don't even consider them worthy and you won't write them down every day, that they're not even worth throwing energy into, dude, you're going to lose interest either way. A good idea is to word your goals as though you've already accomplished them. But make them big, baby. Make them massive. How do you expect massive 10X levels of action if you're setting little bitsy little goals? You're not a mouse. Yeah, I keep this legal pad next to my bed so I can record my goals first thing in the morning and right before I go to bed at night. I do this every day. I've been doing it for years. I miss from time to time. I miss, but I have hundreds of legal pads basically that I've thrown in the trash can with goals from when I was 26, 36, 33, 44, 51, yesterday, today, and they change. We started this audio program about that. Your goals change as life goes on. So I'm rewriting them all the time. This keeps my attention on them. I always keep a legal pad in my office on which I can record new and improved objectives. I'm not talking about a to-do list. I'm talking about goals that are out of reach. The following are some examples of some of the goals I'm currently working on and how I write them down. I'm only using these to show you what I write down in hopes that you're going to start writing your own down. Notice, I word them as though I have already achieved them when I've yet to achieve them. I own 5,000 plus apartments that return over 12% positive cash flow. I'm in perfect health and physical condition. My net worth is over $100 million. My income is over $1 million a month. I have written and published 12 or more best-selling books. My marriage is alive and healthy and a positive model for others. I am more in love with my wife every day. I have two beautiful and healthy children. I have no debt except for that which is paid by others. You see, not all debt is bad. You don't want to say, I don't have any debt. You can never get rich if you have no debt. I have no debt except that which is paid by others. I own a beautiful home in the ocean that has no debt. I own a ranch in California that has incredible views of the mountains and horses and is my ideal scene. I own companies that I'm able to control from a distance and have great people working with me. My children are friends with the most powerful people on this planet. I am making positive difference in my community and politics. I continue to create unique programs that people want and that improve the quality of other people's lives and that people use long after I am no longer around. I have endless energy and interest in my career. I have a hit TV show that has been on for 5 seasons or more. I am one of the largest donors to my church. Keep in mind that these are some of my goals, and they're only being used to give you an example of how I word them. Also note that they are things that have yet to be achieved, not things that have been achieved. None of these things have ever been achieved by me. Average goal setting cannot and will not fuel massive 10X actions. So if you agree with the 10X concept of action, do you got to set bigger goals than you can reach? If you approach an endeavor with average thinking to start with, you will start to give up the moment you even come up against a challenge. The resistance that you know is going to come are less than optimal conditions that will exist sooner or later. Unless you have some big, juicy, giant purpose, baby, that's your engine. That's the fuel. To get through resistance, you must have a big reason to be there. The bigger and more unrealistic your goal, the more they're aligned to your purpose and the duty, the more you'll energize and fuel your actions. For example, let's say I want to save 100 million bones in one bank account or multiple bank account. Look, does anyone need $100 million? No, come on. It is a goal. And the bigger and the juicier it is, the more likely you'll be motivated to move in that direction through resistance. Now, let me ask you, you naysayers out there, you haters, you people drifting off into average land right now, you're going to win a lottery. Okay, you guys are like, I don't need $100 million. You're going to win a lottery. You're going to buy a ticket. It's going to be a buck. You want to win a $1 million lottery or you want to win a $100 million lottery? Come on, man. Get your thinking right. If you're going to win a lottery, win $100 million. You can do more good with it. If you want to add even more energy to your goals, then make sure they're tied to something even bigger than just things like money. For instance, someone who wants to earn money but doesn't have a constructive goal for what to do with that money may only produce the money and then just get rid of it. They'll waste it. You follow me? So if the goal is just I want $100 million, notice I want to do $100 million, but I want to be the biggest donor at my church. It's attached to something worthy. When you're setting a goal, be sure that you're clear about what you want it for. And then if you can, when you're ready, tie it to a bigger purpose. Think massive all the way across the board. Don't just think massive, I want money. Think I can have it all. I want money and to be happy. Think massive and broad, not just vertical. You follow me? Think massive on your goals, big, giant, vertical goals, and broad when setting your goals across all your thoughts, all the areas of your life. Many people make money a target and set a goal to save it, but then just destroy the wealth that was created. They basically, you ever seen a rich celebrity? They got rich and then blew it all? Or an athlete? They got rich and then blew it all? So maybe their goal was just to have a bunch of money temporarily. Or they didn't have a real positive, constructive goal for what to do with that money. Look at how many people just wanted to get rich and did. And then died broke. So having goals aligned with other goals will start to actually help fuel your goal. Let's say one of my goals is to save $100 million, another goal is to use that money to help my church, and another goal is to fund programs to improve conditions for mankind, and another goal is that my products will be used 200 years from now by other civilizations that maybe aren't even on this planet yet. Whatever, you know? See, those are huge, man. Those are giant. So I start thinking, oh, I'm doing this audio program. What do I want to name it? How do I want to get out? How do I protect it so that it's being used years from now? This is an example of combining goals in a broad fashion that will generate the fuel and horsepower to drive your actions and your goals. Look, one of my first jobs that I ever had was at McDonald's. I hated that job. It wasn't because it was McDonald's. It wasn't because I smelled like French fries when I went home. You know, it wasn't because, you know, it was a tough time in my life and I'm 15 years old and I got acne and I think that the French fries and the hamburgers are adding to it. Look, I hated it because it wasn't lined up with my goals and my purposes. The guy who worked next to me, he loved his job because it aligned perfectly with his goals and his purposes. I was the guy making $7 an hour because I wanted to have extra money, you know, during the summer. He was the guy making $7 an hour who wanted to open a business, a McDonald's franchise, by the way. He wanted to open 100 franchises. So every time he's making $7 an hour, he's learning the business, learning about McDonald's, thinking about his franchise. He didn't understand why I was excited, and I didn't understand why he was. I was fired, and he was fired up. Your goals are there to fuel the actions you need to take. So make your goals big, make them giant, make them massive, and make them often, then tie them in with your other greater purposes. Ask yourself whether the goals you have set are equal to your potential. If they're not equal to your potential, man, to your ability, to what you could be actually doing, they're not going to get you jacked. Most people will admit that their goals are well below their potential because most of the world has been convinced, remember, persuaded, and even educated to be small and set small, attainable, and realistic goals. If you're a parent, I'm sure you have heard yourself suggest to your children, or maybe heard it from your parents to you or in your work environment. Man, be reasonable, man. Never set realistic goals. It's a killer. Never be reasonable with your goal setting. You can get a realistic life without setting goals for it. Look, you don't need to go out of your way to have a realistic life. Everybody's got one of those. I despise the word realistic. I hate the word reasonable because they're based on what others consider all right. Others who have probably been operating at only the first 3 degrees of action, who've only accomplished a little bit, and only think in terms of what has been done rather than what is possible. Realistic thinking is based on what others think is possible. But they aren't you, and they have no way of knowing what your potential and purpose is. If you're going to set goals based on what others think, then be sure that you do it based on what the giants on this planet think. If you're going to set goals based on what other things, baby, at least pick the giants. And even that would be a mistake. They'll be the first to tell you, don't base your goals on what I've done, because you can do even more. Jesus Christ said, you can do more than I can do. But what if you set goals based on the top players? Hey, you could do that. Steve Jobs' goal, for instance, he wants to ding the universe. He's not interested in making iPads. He wants to ding, flick the universe. That's huge. He wants to create products that forever change the planet. Look at what he's done with Apple and Pixar. If you're going to set goals comparable to others, buddy, at least pick a giant. At least pick giants that have created massive success in their own right. And always know that you can even do more than that. Many people find themselves on the path they're on simply because they're doing what other average people are doing or have done. Most people go to college not because they want to go to college, but because they're told to go to college. It's the right thing to do. Most people belong to the religion they belong to only because they were brought up in a family that goes to that religion. They don't even really know what they're going to. But they'll fight for it. If the religion comes up, they'll fight for it. But look, they didn't even choose that. Most people speak the language that their family speaks and never take the time to learn another language. Most of us are influenced by the decisions our parents, teachers, and friends have made, and then the limitations set by them on themselves and then for us. I bet that if I asked your 5 closest associates about their goals, I'll probably be able to identify your goals as well. You and your goals are manipulated by your surroundings. I will never tell a person what his or her goal should be. That would be wrong for me to do. However, I would advise that when you do set your goals, take into account that you've been educated with restrictions and limitations. Be aware of this so that you don't underestimate your possibilities. Then take the following into account. You're setting your goals for you, not for anyone else. 2, anything is possible. 3, you have much more potential than you realize. 4, success is your duty, obligation, and responsibility. 5, there is no shortage of success. 6, regardless of the size of the goal, it will require work, period. Once you've reviewed these concepts, then sit down and write down your goals. Write them out for you, maybe for the first time, and then be willing to rewrite them every day until you achieve them. Or maybe you just come up short. I promise you, you'll be pleased if they're big enough. If you underestimate your potential while you're writing them, which is probably going to happen, then it's impossible to set appropriately sized targets. You follow me? Look, if you've underestimated your potential, then it's impossible to set appropriately sized targets for what your potential is. Set the goal too small, and you won't gear up for the massive action necessary. I know the concept of the 10X rule is not for everyone. I know that. It's clearly not for anyone who's willing to accept average or mediocrity, or for those who prefer to kick back and settle for leftovers. It's not for those who want to depend on hope and prayer for their success. Look, the 10X rule is meant for the few people obsessed with creating an exceptional life and who want to be in charge of that process. The 10X rule removes the concepts of luck and chance from your business equation and shows you exactly the mindset you must embrace in order to lock in massive success. Consider the following scenario. Let's say that you're setting your financial goals. Okay, in 2009. Now remember, whatever financial goals you're setting right now, they've been influenced by your education, your upbringing, the newspaper you read, and everything you've heard. In 2009, the President of the United States, at that time, said, anyone who makes $250,000 should be considered rich. Keeping with the current trend, if you make $250,000, your tax will be $100,000, regardless of the state you live in, leaving you with $150,000. After you make payments on 2 cars that most of you have, make a mortgage payment most of you have, pay your property taxes, which you have to pay, okay, feed, clothe, and school your kids, you're going to be lucky to have $20,000 left over. If you save that money for the next 20 years, you'll end up with about $400,000 before interest. And assume nothing goes wrong. Now take into account the fact that your parents, possibly both your parents and your in-laws, didn't plan for their own retirement properly. They're going to outlive their savings by about 15 years and will depend on someone in your household, and they always seem to go with the people with the money, to take care of them. If any of this happens, you're going to find out quite quickly and too late that you underestimated your financial goals. You'll spend more time just trying to manage holding on to it than what it took to accumulate it. And remember, in addition to taking care of your parents, you have to fund your own retirement years and your kids' education. Additionally, this scenario assumes no increases in the cost of living, no bad news, no inflation, no emergencies, no major events. Throw in just a little of what has happened in the last couple of years, hey, just the last couple of months, and you'll see that 90% of the population has underestimated their goals, their targets, and even what was necessary to fund a lifestyle, much less their purposes. Small thinking, baby, it's a disaster waiting to happen, and it's always going to punish you sooner or later. We live on a planet where the primary belief is an underestimation of everything. Do you understand that? Your friends, your associates, your parents, the school you went to, there's an underestimation of everything. The best business schools in this country cite undercapitalization. You didn't fund the company enough, as one of the top reasons for company failures. This is caused by miscalculations of how much cash a company would burn through before its product caught on, and is yet another example of how average doesn't cut it. Companies fail because they didn't sell enough of their products, period. They underestimated how hard it was going to be to get their product to the marketplace fast enough. The biggest regret of my life is not the fact that I haven't worked my ass off. Dude, I did the massive action thing. I've been cranking for 25 years. I wrote 4 books in the last 2 years. That's not the problem. For me, the biggest complaint I have, the biggest regret of my life, it's that I didn't set targets 10 times higher than I originally thought. When I dreamed of how much money, I should have been thinking in the beginning big, but I was influenced by my upbringing. My goals were influenced and limited greatly by the way I was brought up, and yours have been too. You just got to know it. I'm not blaming anyone. It's just a fact. I spent the first 30 years of my business career getting the 10X effort part right, the effort, and I'm going to spend the next 25 years getting the 10X goal setting part right, where I'm thinking big enough. And I'm telling you, you start writing this stuff down now, right now, a year from now, you'll be writing different targets because you'll accomplish the one from a year ago. So number one, set 10X targets for goals. Find out what your target is, 10X it. Align them with other purposes. Number two, write them down every day when you wake up and before you go to sleep. You do that, I guarantee you're going to live and act, operate. You're going to attract new friends, and you're going to play at a different level. Exercise. I want you to write down how your upbringing has influenced your goal setting. Specifically, exactly, goals that you've set that were influenced by your upbringing. Number two, what are some goals you would have set if you knew you could achieve them? Number three, what are other goals or purposes that align with primary goals, the broad goals, you know, the other ones that are attached, that would further fuel your activity? And four, look at the list of goals I wrote and find two things that they all have in common. And every goal I wrote, there's two things that are in common with each one of them. Chapter 10, Competition is for Sissies. One of the greatest lies perpetuated by mankind is the idea that competition is good. Good for whom? Exactly. It might help provide customers with choices, competition would, and it would compel others to do better. That's true. Competition's probably good in athletics because it makes another guy run faster. However, in the business world, you always want to be in a position to dominate, not compete, if you had a choice. Even in athletics, I'd rather dominate if I owned the club. If the old saying, competition is healthy, if that's even true, the new saying is, if competition is healthy, then domination is immunity. Immunity means I never get sick. I'm not at risk. From what I've seen, competing with others limits a person's ability to think creatively because he or she is constantly watching, competing with what someone else is doing. The reason my first business has been so successful is because I created a sales program that introduced a truly original way of selling for which there was no competition. It was a new way, a new thing. It was clearly a new way to think and a new way to approach selling. So people found that interesting. Now, in addition to that, it also worked, okay? No one had done anything new with selling other than just copy or compete. By the way, copying is competing. No one had done anything new with selling for more than 200 years. So I ignored the competition, actually threw away everything else I had ever read on selling, and did something to create a new sales process called information-assisted selling. Now, this is back in the 90s before the internet. Giving people information at that time was not really part of selling. It was about avoiding. This was before net, before customers had information readily available, before Google searches, before social media. But I predicted that sellers would have to throw away the old way of selling and learn how to use information to assist the sale. Although I was ahead of my time and traditional thinkers resisted, once the internet hit critical mass, information-assisted selling became a way of selling for many industries, and my competition was left holding on to antiquated systems and processes. What they do? They started copying me. Copying is a form of competing, and competition is dead. I came out on top because people were thrilled to see something completely new. Forward thinkers don't copy. They don't compete. Forward thinkers create. They also don't look at what others have done. If Steve Jobs with Apple Computer, and this will date the book sooner or later, if he looked at his iPad for what other people had done, he wouldn't have created an iPad. Never make it your goal to compete. Instead, do everything you can to dominate your sector in order to avoid spending your time chasing or competing with someone else. Competition is for sissies. Domination is where you want to be. Don't let another company set the pace. Make this your organization's job to set the pace for the whole sector. Stay ahead of the pack. When I'm driving down the interstate, I speed. I break the law, and I definitely do speed. Why? Because I don't want to be driving with other people. I want to be way out ahead, no wrecks out there. Make it so that you want others to chase you. Be out ahead so others try to be like you, not the other way around. This doesn't mean that you shouldn't study others. You should study best practices, industry trends, what's working, what's winning. However, you want to make it your job to take those concepts to another level. For example, Apple makes computers and smartphones. It didn't copy Dell, IBM, RIM, and what others were doing. Apple doesn't compete. It dominates. It sets the pace, and it lets others try to chase and duplicate them. See, they're always chasing, trying to catch up. Don't set your goals at a competitive level. Set them at a domination level. Set them at a level that will overshadow and dominate your sector and everyone in it. How do you dominate? How do you do this, you may wonder? The first step is to decide to dominate. Man, if you're thinking about competition, baby, you can't dominate. Then the best way to dominate is to do what other people refuse to do. Step two, do what others refuse to do. That's right. Do what they won't do. Do what they say, that's not all right. You can't do that. That's not going to work. Okay? You want to do what